back. You came back after last week. I didn't completely drown you and scare you off. It's a lot of information, I know, but I promise this week is going to help a lot. It's going to clear some things up. The fog is going to start to fade a little bit. Next week will help. And just as a reminder, the audio of all of our lectures here get posted online. And our media team and our tech guys are working really hard to get that up quickly right now. So we're looking to have that hopefully up late tomorrow. You can find that at Fellowship Online. Go to resources, go to classes, scroll down, and you'll see a lot of options there. I mentioned this last week, but I have pulled a good part of what I'm teaching you, not all of it, but a good part from a lady named Beth McCord out of Nashville, Tennessee. She has the site yourenneagramcoach.com, and hopefully you've been there. If not, then you didn't do your homework this week, and that's okay, but Beth is a strong believer, and she clearly processes the Enneagram through Scripture, and I'm super excited to tell you that she is going to speak to us on February the 27th, the last week of our study. She's not actually going to be here, but she's going to be there. And I think she's going to be great. You're really going to enjoy that. So, like today, go home, tell your kids, you know, pull your calendar out. Everybody write on February 27th. Nobody can be sick on this day. Make sure that they know that, because you won't want to miss hearing from her. Along those lines, we're going to be taking questions over the next few weeks. There's several ways you can do that. Your leaders are going to have some note cards in your group. Take one if you think of something. Jot a question down. You have my contact information from last week, hopefully. Shoot me a text. Send me an email. My email's up on the screen right now, carriehcarter@gmail.com. You can post a question to one of our social media pages. There's lots of ways that you can do that, but please send in your questions. We know it's a lot to process. We know it's a lot of information, and we want to help you as much as we can. So we're continuing today and next week with the Enneagram. Okay, this week we're going to look at kind of the negative tendencies. Next week we're going to look at what does it mean to grow to a healthier place. And then in weeks 4 and 5, we're really going to turn the corner and begin to look at 1 Corinthians 13. And so we'll have spent these first 3 weeks looking at our blueprint, the way God has designed us. Then we want to overlay that with God's blueprint that he lays out for us of what love looks like in 1 Corinthians 13. So that's kind of where we're going. But love looks different for each one of us. Yeah? I mean, if you don't know that by now with you and your husband, then that's going to help you tremendously today to go home and say, hey, somebody said that maybe you don't feel love the same way I feel love. Let's talk about that for 5 minutes. It'll blow your mind, I promise. So how does the way God has made me and made my husband affect the way that we live out 1 Corinthians 13 in our marriage? Okay, that is the statement that summarizes this study. And so what we want to do is we would love for you to memorize 1 Corinthians 13 if you've never done that before. And so one of the ways that we're just going to help you in that, it's in your book, but we just want to stand and say that together this morning. And we're going to do that for the mornings and the remaining weeks that we have together. But let's stand together and let's just say this out loud. You ready? Here we go. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Good, and that's 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. All right, you can have a seat. Well, part 2 of the Enneagram, how you doing with finding your type? Kind of figuring out or still kind of clear as mud? Who knows what they are, or they're at least, let's go with 80% sure. Okay, we're doing pretty good. No worries. No worries. It is a process. Don't forget that. And last week, you may have identified with a lot of what I said. You may have identified with things from every single type. And that's true, and that's good, because we have all nine types in us. But remember, what you're looking for are those internal motivations. Because as different types, we can do the same behavior, but we do it for different reasons. And that's what you're looking for, and that's where the Enneagram lives. It's the why behind what you do. So this week, things should become a little clearer for you, because Enneagram really defines you by your negative tendencies. And so last week, where you identified with a bunch of things, this week, you're kind of going to go, oh, yeah, I see that. I feel that in me. Because remember, our personality is basically a coping mechanism. It's how we seek to fulfill our deepest desires, but even more than that, it's how we avoid our deepest fears. And for the most part, all of this happens and functions on a subconscious level. You don't really even know it. And so the power in understanding the Enneagram is that it allows us to take what had been subconscious reactions, thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and become aware of them. And when that happens, we have an opportunity then to not be governed by our type, to not just automatically do something without really even realizing what we're doing and why. And so once we begin to break free from our personality, then we can more clearly and accurately reflect the character of God. And so remember that as believers, that's our goal. That's our goal in studying the Enneagram. It's not to be a better person. It's not to have better relationships. It's to more clearly and completely be a better reflection of God and his character. But just as each type reflects God's character in specific ways, each type also represses or blocks the expression of his character in very specific ways. It's been a couple weeks ago, we had an issue with our fireplace, and we had to replace one of the panels in the back. And so my dad's a builder. He's my go-to guy. When this kind of stuff happens, I call him and say, help, and he helps. And so he ordered the piece we need. He brought it over. He got it mostly in, and then he was like, I'm too old for this. Get one of your young people to climb in the fireplace and fix this. And so Charlie came home, and I said, bud, got a job for you. I need you to climb in here, and I need you to tighten these screws down and fix this panel in place. And so this was Charlie in our fireplace. I know you don't have any idea what Charlie looks like, but that was the scene at my house. And so here I am. I'm trying to hold this flashlight. It's my phone, actually. I'm trying to hold this flashlight because, you know, it's dark in your fireplace. I mean, it's black in there. So he is getting super frustrated because he can't see what he's doing. His hands are blocking the light. Every time I try to shine the light in there, it doesn't shine on the right places. And so finally, he kind of puts the screwdriver down. He climbs out of the fireplace, and he leaves. And I'm like, it's cold. I want to build a fire tonight. You're not done. He comes back from the garage with a headlamp, okay? I don't know if your guys have these. If they don't, this is like, write it down now because it's the best Christmas idea ever. You can get them on Amazon. It's a flashlight that straps to your head, super bright. He comes back in with a headlight, climbs back up in there, turns the light on, boom. He can see everything he needs to see because the light is no longer being blocked by his hands and his arms and the bricks and everything that's in the way. And that's what the Enneagram does for us. It shines that light and it helps us to see everything clearly so then we can make a change. As we combine that with the gospel, that's where it becomes really powerful. And we're going to touch on a little bit of that, but when Beth speaks to us, she is just going to hammer home how the gospel speaks to each type, those fears, those desires, and the behaviors that each type specifically tends towards. So I want you to remember what I said last week, that Enneagram is not a tool designed to bring shame. You're going to feel that today. You're going to begin to feel these behaviors that you know you recognize, but you don't want to own. Don't be ruled by that. I know it's not fun to own your shortcomings and your unhealthy behaviors, but before we can change, we've got to see them, right? We've got to know that they're there. We've got to know what they are. And we've got to remember that those behaviors and those unhealthy shortcomings point us back to Jesus. And that's never a bad thing to be reminded of our need for him, right? So I want you to keep asking that question. How does this play out in my life? What does it look like specifically in my marriage? All right, this week we're going to talk about the structure of the Enneagram for what is called disintegration. All that means is when you're stressed and you go to an unhealthy place, what does your personality tend to do? And it's this crazy, very predictable pattern. Remember that we said the Enneagram is really an internal map, okay? And so if we look at the diagram, we're going to see lines and arrows. Let's go one more forward, Jake. This diagram right here is kind of the standard Enneagram diagram. It's not as pretty as Beth's, so we chose hers. You can see the lines. The lines always stay the same. This week, we're going to look at the pattern of disintegration. And if you follow those arrows, here's how it works. When you're under stress, you're going to move in the direction of the arrow to the average or unhealthy characteristics of your own type and of the type that your arrow points to. Okay? Let me help you clarify this. All right, let's look at the diagram. So if we start the whole pattern at one, where the red star is, okay? If you're a one and you're under stress, then you're going to exhibit the negative side of a one, and you're going to go to the negative side of a four. And all that's going to combine together to create a picture of your tendencies when you're in an unhealthy place. Make sense? Now, you don't have to memorize this pattern because you can look it up at any point, and really you just need to know your number and where you tend to go. But the whole pattern runs along the lines. So it goes from 1 to 4, then 4 will go to 2 under stress, 2 goes to 8, 8 goes to 5, 5 goes to 7, 7 goes to 1, and we start over, okay? So the purpose of the diagram is you could look at a diagram at any point, and you could follow that pattern down, and instead of having to remember all those numbers, you could just look at the diagram and know where to go, okay? But don't worry too much about that. Just know your number and what number you go to, and we're going to keep coming back to that. So let's go through each type specifically and look at the unhealthy side of each type. Now, as you take notes, I know this is a lot of writing, and I apologize to you again that we couldn't have had more printed in your book for you. So I'm going to give you a little shortcut of the structure that I'm going to go through these, so maybe you can kind of shorthand your notes a little bit. At the top of your page, why don't you write this? Number one, there's going to be a 1, 2, 3, 4 for each type. Number one is going to be the pattern, okay, the disintegration pattern. And what all you're going to have to write for number one is 1 to 4, okay, or whatever those numbers are. So that's number one. Number two is going to be the core weakness. Number three, what I want you to write is it's not okay to ... And we're going to complete that statement for each type. It's not okay to ... And then number four, just write, you are ... That's going to be a statement of what each type longs to hear at their core. What's the deepest desire that they're trying to achieve? Okay? So now hopefully you can shortcut your notes a little bit with 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, type one, moral perfectionist. Type ones that are usually methodical go to four where they become irritable and irrational, okay? So I've tried to diagram it for you there. You can see one goes to four. So you write that for your number one point. My numbers are going to be a little off because I added that number one point for you. Sorry. The core weakness of a one is anger, but it's typically expressed as resentment. Under stress, ones become critical, controlling, and judgmental of self and others. Okay, ones have this strong inner critic, this voice that they hear in their head that is always saying, this is wrong, that's a mistake, you should do this better. Constantly a voice running in their head points out mistakes in themselves and in the world around them. And then ones begin to feel a personal obligation to fix everything themselves. Okay? That's where the slide for the one starts. And many times they feel that others are not pulling their weight. They're not doing things right. I'm the only one who ever does anything around here. I find myself feeling that at my house and saying that every once in a while when I lose it. I'm the only one who's doing anything around here. But sometimes they bring this on themselves because they do tend to take over and do everything themselves because they want it done a certain way. And nobody else can do it quite right. They don't trust others to do the task up to their standards. Feeling that? They're seeking perfection in hopes that their inner critic in their mind will finally be quiet. But when that doesn't happen, they get angry and they develop this anger inward towards themselves, this frustration that they can't achieve that standard of perfection. But it's not often that you see them lash out in anger and lose their temper, because that would be wrong, which is the one's greatest fear. You see this little trap that we get caught in? And so then when they begin to fear that they might not be perfect, that they might actually be bad or defective, then they begin to point out that defectiveness in others, kind of level the playing field a little bit. And they begin to criticize and correct others, insisting that everyone live up to these standards that I've set. Ones here, it's not okay, here's your sentence to complete, to make mistakes. And they buy into this lie that says, I'm good if I do what's right. And what they long to hear is, you are good. And again, the beautiful thing is that the gospel speaks so well to this. And I'm going to leave some of that for Beth, because she's really going to explain all that and really bring it home when she speaks to us. But the gospel answers the fears and desires that each type is seeking. Number two, the supportive advisor. Needy twos become aggressive and domineering at eight. So two goes to eight. Their core weakness is pride, but maybe a little different than what you might typically think of. It's pride expressed as an inability or an unwillingness to acknowledge their own suffering or needs. So under stress, they become martyr-like. They become manipulative. They can become super indirect, because they're feeling these needs, but they have a really hard time admitting and expressing that. They become people-pleasing and possessive. Twos can either become really needy, or they can become overly accommodating. But they need to be needed. And so when they get stressed, they can tend to push down or suppress their own needs and continue to push forward in taking care of others. They can really fall into neglecting themselves, because twos feel like they need permission to take care of themselves. And when twos begin to fear that they themselves are unwanted and unloved, then they believe that they've got to kind of go out and win others over. And if that doesn't work, then they'll go the other route and they'll make others feel unloved and unworthy of their attention. Or they might find out what others' needs are and create some dependencies there. And the lie that they hear is, it's not okay to have your own needs. It's not okay to have your own needs. Or I'm a good person if I'm loved. And so what they long to hear is, you are loved. Okay, that's a two on the downward spiral. Type three, the successful achiever, they are normally driven, but under stress, they become disengaged and apathetic at nine. Okay? If we look at the unhealthy side of a nine, that's what a nine looks like. Checked out. Their core weakness is deceit. Not necessarily telling lies to others, but believing that they are only the image that they project. So sometimes they can project an image that's not really true to who they are. Under stress, they become deceptive, superficial, self-promoting, workaholics. They can become vain and overly competitive. When threes begin to shift to an unhealthy place, they drive themselves to achieve, but it's for status and attention. It's to maintain this image that they feel like is the one that they want others to see. Okay, so again, you begin to see some overlap and some parallels where you have to look deeper to the next level. A type one is going to be methodical and achieving, but they're going to do it because they don't want to make mistakes. There's going to be a different why behind the behavior, okay? And that's going to be true for, you're going to see it again in fives. You're going to see it in other personality types. But you got to look behind the behavior to the motivation. If that doesn't work for threes, then they'll begin to charm others by adopting whatever image they think will work in a given situation. They become super adaptable, but almost to the point where they lose themselves. And if that still doesn't work, and they begin to fear that they are actually worthless and without value, then they'll begin to make others feel worthless by treating them arrogantly or with contempt. Okay? What they hear is, it's not okay to have your own feelings and identity. And they believe that I'm a good person if I do something valuable. But what they really long to hear is, you're loved simply for being you, the real version of you. Not the successful image that you think everyone admires. All right, type four, the romantic individualist. Fours are typically kind of aloof, but they suddenly can become clingy and over-involved. Their core weakness is envy. Sorry, fours go to two on your pattern there. Their core weakness is envy, and they feel that something in them is missing and that others possess the qualities that they lack. And under stress, they become withdrawn, moody, depressed, and self-pitying. Because fours find their identity in their feelings. But the problem is, our feelings are always changing, right? So for a four, that means their identity is always changing, which is a problem. And so what they do is they use their imaginations and they begin to identify with the feelings that they want to identify with. and they reject the feelings that they don't identify with as much. And they go into their imagination and they kind of say, if we went down this road, if I had this, then I would feel this and I would be complete and I would be whole. And so they begin to imagine these scenarios that reinforce the identity that they most agree with. Does that make sense? It's a little hard for me as a one to kind of grasp because I don't have that really as much, but the problem that this leads to is that they end up in a world that's not based in reality. Because now their identity is constructed on these feelings that came from their imagination, and we have a problem here. And so fours can become temperamental. They can even become highly emotional, swinging from high highs to low lows. And what that does in relationship is it causes other people to walk on eggshells around them because they don't want to trigger the high highs, but especially the low lows. They don't want to be the cause of this moodiness. The lie that they believe is it's not okay to be too functional or too happy. They always have kind of this little bit of angst. And they believe that I'm a good person if I remain true to myself, to my feelings. And what they long to hear is you're loved exactly for who you are. Type five. Fives are our investigative thinker. And when they're stressed, they go to seven. And they become scattered and kind of hyperactive. Okay, they lose their focus. They move out of who they were meant to be to this scattered place in their minds. And their core weakness is called avarice. And that's just another word for greed. Okay, fives feel like they lack the inner resources to really engage with the world. And so they think that too much interaction is just going to overwhelm them. And so what they tend to do is they disengage. They kind of hoard those resources, including their time and their energy, because they don't want to be completely depleted. And they ration out that energy very carefully. Under stress, they become stubborn, distant, even cynical and stingy. And when they get stressed, they withdraw from reality and they retreat as well into their mental world, similar to a four, but a little different. They fear that their skills and their knowledge are insufficient to really engage with the world. And so instead of engaging, they retreat in their mind and they try to keep shoring up that knowledge, those skills. They also tend to substitute mental experience for the real thing. They can go somewhere in their minds, and to them, it really is almost as good as actually doing something. So they can learn all about rock climbing and know every aspect of it, but they never actually go rock climbing. Okay? And so what they tend to do is they detach emotionally from others and they stay preoccupied in whatever it is that they're learning about, whatever it is that they're building this knowledge and skill about. And if that escape plan doesn't work, then they begin to feel their deep fear of incompetence. And what they'll do in turn is they'll make others feel incompetent and helpless. The lie that they believe says it's not okay to be comfortable in the world. And they might believe I'm only a good person if I've completely mastered something. But they long to hear that your needs are not a problem. We all have needs. We all have shortcomings. We don't have to master every aspect of our lives in order to be loved. So they long to hear your needs are not a problem. Type 6 is the loyal guardian. And under stress, 6 goes to 3. And they become paranoid and defensive, self-defeating, suspicious. Their core weakness is fear and anxiety. They worry about what could happen. Okay, similar to ones who have an inner critic that runs in their head, 6s have an inner committee. Okay? Because they have a hard time making decisions and they listen to everybody and they hear everybody's opinion, and in their heads, they have all these competing voices that are trying to agree on something. They don't have confidence in their own judgment, and so they look to others outside themselves for guidance. They don't trust themselves completely, and so they're looking for someone outside themselves that they do trust. And this leads to a great deal of anxiety in sixes because they can see those worst case scenarios. They tend to be worst case thinkers, which when that is in a healthy setting, that's a great thing because they can see possible problems that are coming down the road. But when they're kind of in that average to unhealthy side, they see all these, well, what if this happens? Well, what if that happens? If I make that decision, then this is going to happen. But if I make this decision, then that's going to happen. Lots of anxiety and worry with a 6. And so they become dependent on an outside source for guidance. And then they test others' commitment to them by complaining, by telling them about that worry. If I do this, I can't, you know, I just can't ever figure it out. And when those strategies don't work to meet their needs, then they begin to undermine the support system of those around them and try to isolate those people. They can get to a really unhealthy place relationally. And the lie that they believe is it's not okay to trust yourself. And they believe, I'm a good person if I do what's expected of me. And what they long to hear is, you are safe. All right, that's 6. 7 is the entertaining optimist. Under stress, 7 goes to 1. Okay, so I hope you're following how this works. As you're filling out your page, by the end of the day, what you can do is, if you're a 7 and you know, okay, under stress, I go to 1, then you can look at the negative things under 7. That's going to be part of your picture. You can also look up your page at the negative things under a 1, and you're going to express some of those as well. Does that help you understand kind of how these work together? Their core weakness is gluttony. Okay? We typically think about that in eating for some reason. But for a 7, they're going to pursue stimulating activities and ideas to overcome this feeling of emptiness. And under stress, they're going to become impulsive, escapist, probably kind of scattered as they're trying to find that thing that they're looking for and they just can't ever quite find it. And sometimes they're going to become even manic. 7s become restless, feeling like there's always something just a little bit better out there. If I could just find it. And they never quite feel that longing they feel, which keeps them looking to the next thing and the next. And they move on quickly, and they get bored, and they keep trying things. And again, I hope you're feeling just the opportunity for the gospel to speak to that. They like to be around others, but they don't really want to be needed like the 2 does. Because that drains their resources, and it kind of cramps their style. You know, it takes away some of their freedom. But while they don't want demands to be placed on them, they will begin to insist that others meet their demands. Okay, so they have kind of this one-way street going relationally. And the lie that they believe is it's not okay to depend on anyone for anything. And I'm a good person if I feel good and I get what I want. And they long to hear you will be taken care of. Two more. Type 8, the protective challenger. 8 goes to 5. So again, you can look at the negatives that we talked about for 5, and that's going to be part of the picture of an 8. Their core weakness is lust. Now, not like we would typically think of it again, but a constant need for intensity, control, and power. Under stress, they become controlling, domineering, excessive, and that can be in all different areas, and confrontational. 8s feel like they have to push and struggle and strain to make things happen, but they pretty much usually believe that they can make it happen. And what that can lead to is dominating and demanding others, that others do what they say. In their fear of being controlled, they control others, making others fearful of them. They kind of become the bullies who are aggressive, insensitive, and domineering. But their core is that they feel like they have to protect themselves. And this leads to 8s feeling like they have to toughen up. They got to be tough against the outside world. And they've got to kind of gather up these resources that they need in order for them to be secure. The lie that they believe is it's not okay to be vulnerable or to trust anyone. And they believe that they're a good person if they're strong and in control. And what they really long to hear is you will not be betrayed. Type 9, the peaceful mediator. Now, I told you when we follow the pattern here. We start at 1, and we kind of follow the lines like this. Well, we missed these 3 numbers. Now you can see that there's a triangle as well. 3, 6, and 9 move around the triangle. Okay? So in an unhealthy pattern, we go from 9 to 6, 6 to 3, 3 to 9. Okay, next week we're going to see that everything reverses when you go in a healthy direction. So under stress, 9 moves to 6. Their core weakness is sloth. And it's not necessarily laziness, but it's an unwillingness to fully engage. It's an unwillingness to fully be awake to their own selves, their own desires, their own feelings. When you ask a 9 who is not in the most healthy place what they think of something, here's what their answer is going to be. 3 words. I don't know. Okay. Well, how do you feel about this? I don't know. Where do you think we should go to dinner? I don't know. Okay. That's going to be a 9. Under stress, they're checked out. They're unassertive, complacent, and stubborn. And it's because 9s seek internal peace and external peace. So they can be hard to read because they may not let things show. Okay, my oldest is a 9, and I'm having to really learn to get better at knowing when she's stressed because she just kind of stays right here. It doesn't really show. In order to keep the peace, they may become overly accommodating to others. Where do you want to go for dinner? I don't know, wherever you want to go. What do you want to do? Whatever you want to do. And if that doesn't work and there's still tension, then they'll just kind of check out even more. They fear losing connection with others. So to avoid that fear, they'll just avoid engaging at all. Does that make sense? It seems kind of backwards. And they can become very passive-aggressive. Now, 9 is a little different on the Enneagram because while most types do things and feel things that define their identity, 9s are really defined by not knowing and not doing. They seek out things that kind of numb out any of those feelings that might be trying to creep in. Okay, they can get lost in addictions, whether it's harmless things like Netflix and social media, or more destructive things that we would typically think of as addictions. 9s will avoid and deny issues that need to be dealt with because of the stress associated with those things, because that disrupts their peace. The lie that they believe is it's not okay to assert yourself. And I'm a good person if everyone around me is getting along. But what 9s long to hear is your presence matters. A 9 needs to hear, I want to know how you feel. I want to know what you think. That matters to me, to have you around. Okay? You made it. Week 2 down. How you doing? Is it kind of becoming clearer? Did you kind of pick up on some things in that sort of helped you maybe refine your type, main type? I really just encourage you, if you're still unsure, look back at week 1. Look at this week, the 3 things you really want to look at: the core fear, the core desire, and that core weakness. Really think about which one of those do you identify with. Don't forget, you can print off an overview of all 9 types from yourenneagramcoach.com. Just a front and back sheet, has all that stuff summarized for you. It's a great resource. And it's helpful to think back over your life, because a lot of us have processed through a lot of things and we are healthier now than we were maybe than we were 16 or 18 or 20, right? So think back to those days. What tendencies did I feel then? What were my reactions then? What were my drivers? And sometimes that helps things become more clear to you. If you still aren't sure, it's okay, it's a process. Call me, email me, text me. We have coffee, we can talk on the phone. I'd love to help you as you're trying to understand more about yourself. But really the question begins to become, and I hope you're feeling it, okay, what do we do with all this? Well, first, I just want to remind you that God has called each one of us to focus on our own selves. It's the hardest place, but that's what he's called us to. Not to focus on others, because when we do that, it'll transform our situation. No matter how the other people in the situation react, no matter how your husband reacts or responds or doesn't react or doesn't respond, if you begin to work on your own self and transform your own behavior and your own actions, God honors that. And his grace and his power will make amazing changes in your relationship, because the way we use the Enneagram is to become more aware. Remember, it's that light. It shines that light. It lights up what our tendencies are. And when we become aware, we can choose to not be ruled by our type, to not be ruled by those automatic responses. And we're going to talk more about that next week and the weeks after that. Beth will close it out when she speaks to us. But for now, the biggest thing I can tell you is just begin to be aware. Begin to recognize these things in yourself. begin to see when you're buying into that lie that specifically speaks to your type. And ask God to fill you with his power to choose to believe and act differently. And your personality, because it's part of your flesh, is going to put up a fight. And it's going to say, no, wait a minute. This is how we've always done it. This is how we've avoided those fears. This is how we've met our desires. We're not changing. But I love what 2 Corinthians 5:17 says. It says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away, and behold, all things have become new. I mean, isn't that like you just want to say, yes, thank you, God. Thank you that we don't have to be stuck in those patterns. Thank you that that's what the gospel offers us, and that we can become a new creation and that our shortcomings point us back to our need for you. Let me pray for us, and then we'll go to small groups. God, thank you for today. Thank you. The deeper I go in this, the more I realize that you are in this, God, because we are created in your image. We are made to reflect you, God. And you've made us to where we reflect you in unique ways, but we also have unique struggles that point us to you, push us to you, show us our need for you, God. Would you just help us be aware of those this week? Would you help us to recognize when we're going there and just stop and just, even if we don't have the power to change yet, God, even if we don't know what to do differently, would we just stop and be aware that, hey, this is not a healthy place to go? And would we just ask you for your power, for your presence, for your courage? And would we feel your love in that moment for us as you are refining us to make us more like you, God? We love you and praise you. Just go with these women this week. In Jesus' name, amen.